Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Dealers of Ireland. Our showrooms are open for business with your health and safety our priority. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie is our email. It's a discussion that began last Tuesday, the day after the Black Lives Matter demonstration in Dublin. People were taken aback by the size of the crowd who almost spontaneously came out and marched to the American embassy. And we were contacted by a number of people who were either on the demonstration or had something to say about why they believed the demonstration had become so big. And the general thesis was that Irish people of colour have come of age and they're sick, sore and tired of racism, and they're speaking out about it now as they hit their late teens and early 20s and feel safe to do so. And there's testimony all week. And then on Friday's programme, we had this incredible letter from Trey Jones, who, as he said, I'm black and I'm proud to be black. And Trey is in school in County Meath, and he talked about the racism that he encountered. Cruel, cruel racism. Trey is 11 years of age. Now, Sarah, among a number of people contacted us, is Sarah. Sarah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. You say children are not born racist or haters. It is something they are taught. The darkest place my son got to over racism was when he told his girlfriend that he was going to end it all. What's your experience, Sarah?
Well, my experience goes back to the 1980s, when, okay, as you have rightly said, there were very few people of colour or biracial people in Ireland at the time. And as I said to you in my email, I experienced what I class as ignorant racism from a very early point. I think the earliest was a couple of hours after my son was born. Mm-hmm. I was in the Rotunda at the time. There weren't birthing suites. It was just one big room with cubicles. And a doctor walked in after I had my son, after a couple of hours, and he asked out loud, which is the cubicle with the girl with the half-caste child in it?
My God.
And no, but I mean, the thing was that the intention behind that, and I always think about intent, the intention wasn't to hurt or to be derogatory. I think it was just a term, because I think that, as I say, that's the ignorant racism. Like the lady on the bus who asked me, you know, obviously she assumed I had adopted my child, and she said to me, oh, and did you ask for one that colour? You know, this was ignorant racism. Or, you know, the guy in the supermarket who said to me one day, oh, isn't it great to see that our money went to some use? And I sort of looked and said, oh, you know, our troker money, penny for the black baby, we were, at least, you know, we got one out. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was just, that was in a conversation, I was like, you know, and that was, that, as I class it, ignorant racism. And then you had the awful other side of racism that my son endured. As I said, he's a man now in his 30s, but he endured it as a very young child. And it's very strange, since I've sent the email, things have come back into my mind that I completely forgot about. You know, one time he came home from school and he had asked me, what's a mongrel? And I thought he was talking about, obviously, a dog or something. Yeah. I explained to him, I said, oh, so, you know, it's a dog that isn't a purebred. And he said, well, why do, and he named a particular child in class, call me that? And, you know, he experienced a lot of bullying through school and everything. And it, as I said in my email, it got to the stage where I decided to go and confront. He arrived home one time, missed his bus, didn't miss his bus. He didn't get his bus because his money was taken and that. Yeah. So I went up to the school the next day. And I confronted the man, I asked, I said, look, sorry, could I have a word with you? Okay. I took her away from the other mams. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I said, look, I'm not sure if you know that named son is harassing, you know, giving him a bit of a hard time. Didn't even want to say harassed, just giving him a bit of a hard time. And her exact words were, what do you expect when you have, now she didn't say that politely, this, an F and N for a son.
My God.
So I just turned around and I just walked away, you know, and I just thought, I ended up taking them out of that school, putting them into a different school and that. And but that was just constant, Joe, through his childhood.
When that woman said that to you, what do you expect when you have an effing N
an
for
F and
a
N.
Like, did you stumble away? How would you recover from such a horrific, venomous thing to be said to you?
That's exactly what I did. I actually took two or three steps back and I sort of looked and I just turned around and I just walked away. I could remember the tears literally coming into my eyes. And I just was stunned. There was just nothing. I hadn't got words to say back to that woman. And that's what I mean when I say this taught me. That young child was the same age as my child. Mm-hmm. He didn't pick those words off the ground. He'd heard those words at home. He'd obviously gone home and said to his mother, "Oh, so and so in school, he has brown skin or black skin or whatever." Yeah. Like, you know? And obviously her retort back to the child was, "Well, obviously he's a little and use the N word." And then this child obviously has learned that, well, you know, this is somebody that you just make fun of, either make fun of or you hurt or you intimidate him, you know. And
the story of your son in more recent times, I suspect, horrifically, working in Dublin City Centre.
Oh, yeah, he was doing security in Dublin City Centre, down right in the city centre, just around, in and around, I would say, Dame Street. And again, as I said in the email, I mean, the description of my son is a gentle giant. He's a big guy, looks quite intimidating, but seriously, Joe, you couldn't have happened to meet a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And he was on security this night, and a group of young lads, maybe mid-20s, arrived at the door, quite inebriated. He'd said to them, "Look, lads, sorry, can't allow you in tonight," and things like that. Very pleasant and that. Now, again, they weren't intimidating, they weren't shouting, and they weren't going to throw punches or anything, but they went off along the way and found an open shop on the corner there, I'm sure you know it, and arrived back with a bunch of bananas and started throwing them at him and making monkey gestures to him. And that's when he just said to me he had enough, he just couldn't take anymore. He shut down, he was let off work that night, he never went back to it again. He, as I said, he took to the bed and became quite depressed. And part of the way he explained it to me was, he said, "When you get up in the morning, Mam," he said, "and you get up, you put your shoes and socks on, you get dressed to go out." He said, "I do that," he said, "but then I have to put on another armour around me to protect myself," he said, "from the jibes and the mockery." And he said, "You know, and there's always the fear in the back of my mind that it's going to turn angry, that it's going to turn violent, you know." And that's very hard to hear that from your from your adult child, like, you know. So, yeah, as I said, Joe, I do think it's a tall thing. It's, you know, and it reminded me of going back to when I was in school myself. We had a nun. I went to the nuns, and she used to say, "We can only build on what you bring from home." And as much as the schools can do, and they can do a lot, they can't eradicate this because it has to come from home. It has to come from the parents who think that this is wrong. And the people on, you know, another time he was on a Lewis, and as I said, he's biracial. So he said, "I'm either black and I'm either white." He said, and when it was all on around the time of the terrorist attacks and the ISIS, he said, "I got on the Lewis one day with a backpack on my back," he said, "and it was like the parting of the waters, you know." And he said, "I just got it every way," he said. And but when he was on that bus, when he was in Dane Street, around Dane Street that night, and they had bananas thrown at him, nobody came to him. Nobody came to his aid. Yeah, nobody said anything. So it's the old adage, like, you know, that evil will prevail when good people stand by and do nothing. And until we all stand up and say, "Hold on a second, that's wrong."
That's,
we're all very culpable of it as well.
And that's why your testimony is so powerful, and Trey's and other people last week. Your son hopefully got back on his feet?
Oh, I mean, he did, Joe. As I said, when I got that phone call that day, I had to go down. As I said, heartbreaking stuff I listened to. He had to go. He was put on medication. He was did a lot of therapy and that. And it's in an excellent job now at the moment, and it suits him because it's an international company, and he does a lot of Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. And he said he finally feels if he fits in somewhere, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And thankfully, it turned out very well. But I'm sure there were cases out there that didn't turn out as well as that one. Yeah. But I mean, as you said, he also then recently ended up with a hearing problem. And he has said to me, it's the best thing that's ever happened to him. Because he can take his hearing aids out and he can't hear the jibes anymore.
Oh, God.
Imagine a man in his 30s saying it's a good thing to be wearing hearing aids, but he has a hearing problem, but he doesn't have to listen to that anymore. You know, a 33-year-old man who said he doesn't want to have children, that he wouldn't subject a child of his to go through what he had to go through.
My God.
That's the Ireland of 2020 we live in.
Okay, stay with us, Sarah.
Yeah.
Martina Busaday. Martina, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, good afternoon.
You were prompted to contact us as well after you heard Trey's letter on Friday.
Yeah, I was really, really sad to read his letter and see what he's been going through, because obviously I've been through exactly what he's been through and I know how it feels.
And were you... A number of callers last week said we were the only black people in the area. Mm-hmm. What was your experience, Martina?
Yeah, in our area, we were the only black people there too. Mm-hmm. And we got racism from everyone. So it wasn't, you know, just children. It was adults, even elderly people. And more or less everywhere we went, someone would say something.
And... painting, I think was it Jesse who told us last week the story about painted nasty things painted on their home.
Yeah, I mean, we've had things painted outside our door and things thrown at our house, at our car, a number of different things. I mean, I remember the two local schools, they wouldn't accept us. So we actually had to go to the furthest school, which was about a 30-minute walk every day.
Yeah.
And that walk was just so horrific. By the time I got to school, I was just so drained because someone was always saying something or shouting something or throwing something and people driving by in cars shouting abuse.
Just because of the colour of your skin?
Yeah.
And the incident on the bus where your mother would sit you on her lap.
Yeah, I mean, I remember as far back as taking the bus with my mum and she'd have me on her lap and she'd be covering my ears with her hands because people on the bus were saying stuff. People getting on the bus were saying racial abuse. And it's insane, like, because it affects... the whole family. It affects every single one of you. So it was a lot to deal with, you know, from such a young age, and a lot from my parents.
Well, I hope people who are listening see this as an education, and it's time for all of us who haven't, all of us of colour, regardless of the pigment of our skin, to check racism wherever it happens. Martina, you wrote a letter to Trey in reply to Trey's letter, which you read out on Friday. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play Trey's letter and then you can reply to it. I just want to remind people of the power of this boy's letter and the cruelty that he endured. Now, remember, Trey was on the line with his mother and they talked about beforehand about going public. So they had all that teased out because it's a very difficult letter to listen to. This is 11-year-old Trey Jones.
My name is Trey Jones. I'm 11 years old. People say I'm mixed race, but I say that I'm black because I know what people see when they look at me. I'm proud to be black. Since I was a baby, I've suffered from racism from adults and children who are white. I have been called the N-word so many times. I have been told to go back to Africa. I have been called chocolate-faced monkey and burnt and that I'm a little slave boy. These things really hurt my feelings, and I will hear these things like this for all my life. I wish white people would stop being racist and be kinder to all races.
Do you want to reply, Martina?
I do, yeah. Dear Trey, my name is Martina. I saw your letter and I heard your voice on Twitter on Joe's show. I am too mixed race. My mum is Irish and my dad is Nigerian, and unfortunately I too received a lot of racism growing up in Ireland, and I still do to this day. I wanted to let you know that I've been there and I know exactly how you feel. I'm so saddened to hear that you're going through this. I'd hoped that by now Ireland would have changed. I wanted to share with you some of the things my parents told me when I was your age and younger going through this. You are beautiful. You are special. You are brave. You are smart. You are loved. You can be anything you want to be in this life and never forget that. These words helped me to overcome those feelings of hurt and pain, and I focused on my schoolwork and my talents. So focus on you. Don't let anyone take your light away and shine bright. Sending you lots of love and hugs, Martina. And P.S. Black is powerful.
Okay, well... Well said, and you got the tone, you got Trey's upset and the tone right there, Martina. Stay with us. Mary Corcoran is a principal of St. Columbkill's Senior National School in Kells, and that is where Trey Jones is in fifth class. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Thank you
for listening to me. I'm good. Yeah, just for the background of some of your listeners, Trey had contacted me to know if he could do some project work on racism in his next work pack out that they get each week. And I encouraged him to actually do it this week to write down his thoughts. And I firmly believe in listening to the voice of the child and to speak and say how he felt, you know, and to create an awareness. So we're really proud of Trey and his mum, Keir, for the courage to speak, you know, on the radio, because to me it's like stepping out onto the edge of a cliff, you know, really putting himself out there and speaking out. Now, as Trey and his mum said, he has many friends and here in St. Columbkill's, and he's highly respected. And, you know, they did stress that. But I think it was very disturbing to hear Trey and some of the callers describe the hurtful comments directed at them by some children and adults. Because racist remarks are unacceptable, even for a small minority, and it can never be condoned. Now, your interview with Trey and his mum did two things. Number one, I think it highlighted this destructive minority, but more importantly, it highlighted the importance of having support and a supportive community around everybody. So after listening, you know, to all your stories, and you will have many more stories coming in, but when I reflected, I thought, where do we go from this? How can we improve? How can we make things different for children who suffer any racial abuse? Yeah. And I think education is key.
Yeah.
And it's key for changing attitudes, because it's attitudes that we're changing. But attitudes are slow to change. Now, St. Columbkill's is an inclusive school, and its enrollment reflects our modern multiracial community. But respect for each other is key. Yeah. And, Joe, one of our rules is show respect, expect respect.
Yeah.
So they have to expect it back. And it's the cornerstone of what we believe in St. Columbkill's. But respect is central to any strong community. And in spite of the individuals who disrespected Trey, I do believe that the overall community of Kells is not racist.
Mm-hmm.
Trey's experience reminds us we must be vigilant, you know, to ensure that any ugly comment is met immediately by many uplifting comments to restore the confidence of children and like Trey. And we will do our absolute best to ensure this happens in our school and in our community so that every child matters and that they believe that they matter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have been working in St. Columbkill's for over 30 years now as a teacher and now as a principal in the last few years. And I have to say that the parent body and extended community are respectful and welcoming to all. And Kira, I was speaking with Kira yesterday, and she will say that as well. They will nurture Trey and all young people.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that this generation will be more open, tolerant, respectful and welcoming to all. I think that there's that growth mindset now, and we just have to keep teaching it in school and being open to it in the communities. This growth mindset that children like Trade, children like Greta Thunberg, it has a clear and ethical vision. And children have a great sense of justice and injustice as well. And I don't doubt their ability to succeed. And in Trey's case, I don't doubt the strong support of the school and the community of Kells that he will experience.
I spoke
with Trey yesterday, or with his mum yesterday, and she said he's had a fantastic weekend with all his little friends being supportive towards him. They've sent messages to him. They've said how brave he is to stand up for his rights. And I do believe that this awareness is out there now and that we build on this. So this positivity and outpouring of support will grow from this awareness. I think it's about building this awareness and building this support.
Stay with us, Mary. Stay with us for a sec. I just want to bring Phil Mullen in. Phil, good afternoon. Reminder, Joe at rt.ie, 51551, wash your hands, 1850 715 815. Phil, you were listening to Trey's letter on Friday as well.
I was, Joe, and to be honest, it takes a lot to come under my rock. And I suppose I was moved.
Okay, Phil, stay there. I'm going to try and get a better line. After this break, 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're listening to reaction to the letter from Trey Jones, 11 years of age, which you read out on Friday's live line, and it was a letter he wrote as part of a school project in the school in St. Colum Kills, Senior National School in Kells, which he loves, by the way. Reaction to it, Phil Mullen. Phil, good afternoon again.
How you doing, Joe?
Okay. You said, I was struck listening to Trey last Friday and how little has changed in 50 years vis-a-vis racism in Ireland. What's your story, Phil?
Well, I would have been born in Ireland in the 60s. I'm mixed race. I am half Nigerian, half Irish. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of ticking boxes listening to Trey last week and probably listening to all of your stories and the young woman who was on there just a few minutes ago, talking about having to run the gamut of insults on her way to school. I know for me, I would have had very, very similar experiences of what was happening back then when I was a child. So listening to a young child who's still experiencing that kind of behaviour, it was quite moving and very sad.
And where were you from and where were you born? What part of Ireland?
Well, I was born in Hollistrees. Yeah. My mother had a concealed pregnancy. My father was a qualified doctor. He had studied medicine here in Trinity College.
A concealed pregnancy, Phil.
She had a concealed pregnancy, she did, and I was born, I think it was a bus strike. Mm. So she was from Dunleary, so when she went into labour, she had to start walking towards Hollistrees from Dunleary. Obviously, she couldn't tell anybody, so she was heading off into Hollistrees to give birth on her own, and luckily, somebody pulled in and offered her a lift somewhere around Black Rock. And then I was put into care into an industrial school and sent down to St. Bridget's in Galway.
And what age were you put into care?
I was 17 days old and I left at 16.
And were you put into care because of the colour of your skin?
Well, I suppose it was a complex time, Joe, being an unmarried mother and black, I suppose. It was a double whammy, for many children like me. I don't suppose she ever kind of considered keeping me, although we did have a relationship. But the fact that it was a concealed pregnancy kind of tells you what was going on.
And when
you say
concealed, Phil, did her parents know? Did your grandparents know?
No, her father was dead, but she lived with her mother. And her mother ran a boarding house in Dunleary. But no, nobody knew. I think maybe one sister knew, kind of an ally.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, nobody knew. So she gave birth and I was put into a halfway house on Hollistrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went down to St. Bridget's in Galway.
What was your experience there, Phil?
I don't have any memory of it. It closed down in 67, so then I was moved up to Boothistown. I stayed there till I was 16.
Yeah. And what was your experience there?
Well, I suppose would describe it as an isolating one. I didn't experience the type of abuse that many people would talk about in relation to industrial schools, that kind of physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly when you're growing up as one of 100 children, you know, it's not the warmest, most caring environment. I would suppose talk about neglect rather than abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe more emotional, psychological kind of impacts of growing up in a place like that, more than the physical impacts. And I think being black in a in an institution like that, you experience mm-hmm. all of the colourful language that goes along with being different.
And was there anyone, to use your own phrase, of mixed race? Anyone else of mixed race in the that school, the industrial school setting,
as it goes? Well, over the years, I've kind of counted up that during my time there,
mm-hmm.
there would have been up to 8 children.
Okay.
But I've done work recently, and I've discovered that there were other institutions where there would have been up to 20 black mixed-race children at any given time around the country in different institutions. I mean, some people would say they grew up with maybe between 14 and 20 other black mixed-race children.
And was there... I know, as you say, you're... And every situation is complex, and you say your own mother's situation is complex. But have you any sense of why there was such a... Like, 15 out of, say, 100 is 15%, but the coloured population in Ireland at that time wasn't 15%. Do you follow me? Do you know the point I'm trying to get?
I do follow you, but I would also say that in some of the work that I've done,
mm-hmm.
I would see that there was a constant stream of... let's say, students coming from Africa.
Yeah.
There was also Irish women going to the UK
and
having relationships and having children. So it wasn't necessarily just based on the indigenous population.
Mm. I those figures are much higher than I thought.
I think it was a surprise to me when I was doing the work, and I think it would be a surprise to a lot of people, and probably based on the fact that the majority of black mixed-race children got the hell out as quick as their little legs could carry them as soon as they left the institutions.
Oh, you mean got the hell out of Ireland?
Got the hell out of Ireland, and alas, have never come back, ever. You know, and their experiences were so damaging that alas wouldn't have very much good to say about it.
And how did you process the experiences of racism that you endured, Phil?
For me, I suppose I started to build up a foundation of knowledge for myself. So I was in London once and I came across a magazine called Ebony,
mm-hmm.
Which was a black American magazine. And so I actually started ordering that to Dublin back in the early 80s. And then I would have started reading people like James Baldwin, who I discovered by accident.
The Invisible Man.
And The Fire Next Time.
Yeah.
So that was the first time that I ever saw what I was feeling, what I was processing, articulated and laid down on paper. And that had a big impact, you know, took away that sense of isolation.
Okay.
Anything that I was feeling was weird.
Okay, I want to ask Martina and Sarah on the part of her son. Martina, how did you process the racist abuse that you and your family endured in Ireland? And are enduring? You mentioned that it's still happening.
I guess my parents really helped me to get through it. Like, some days were really quite bad. And I think, as well, you need to be a very strong mental person. Not everybody is.
Yeah.
I was very strong mentally. I still am. And I was able to deal with it. And I always fought back. My parents always fought back.
Yeah.
So we were a very strong family, and we always stuck together.
Okay.
And that's how we dealt with it.
And Sarah, in your scenario, you have explained that your son, thankfully, with your help and his partner's help and his own propulsion, has moved to a better place, so to speak.
I think Joe, when he was growing up, I tried to shield him from it.
Did you? Okay.
And what I did was, I worked 2-3 jobs, and I sent him to a boarding school where there was international students. Yeah. So he wasn't the odd one out. Yeah. He was just one of many of different races there. And I suppose that was the way I worked, and I just I didn't want him to have to deal with it.
Okay, fair play. My God.
You know, and then I went on to have three more children. Now, they're not mixed race. Mm-hmm. And I sent them to Educate Together schools, which is absolutely fantastic, you know.
And what was your son's experience in the boarding school, where, as you say...
Fantastic. Okay, absolutely great, fantastic. Great. Has friends there that he met and are still friends today.
Super.
You know, and he said he felt safe there. He felt safe, he didn't feel different. Okay. But when he would be coming home at the weekends and he'd have to get on the train, the principal dropped him into the trains to come home for the weekend, and it would all start again. And when he would come home, he wouldn't go out at the weekends, and he'd wait to get back to school on Sunday night again, so he could be among people that he felt safe among. You know,
the school almost was a place of safety, it sounds.
Oh, it was school. Yeah. The secondary school. I mean, I don't know what he would have, or where I would have been today with him, if I hadn't sent him to the boarding school. I really don't. I just, because of the experience he had in the two primary schools, I took him out of the first one, put him into second primary school, and that wasn't as bad, but there was still. You know, and a lot of it came, as I said, from the parents. It comes from home. And that's why this started out initially last week and that, and I sent in, I said, I'm not racist, why am I not surprised?
Yeah.
You know, because anyone who has had a child or is a child of mixed race will understand that this has been going on, as that lady said, since the 60s. And I'm sure before that again, you know. So I don't think an awful lot has changed. I think what has changed is that people who haven't been privy to that are now hearing it.
Yeah. Let me bring say what it's there. Brendan, good afternoon, Brendan.
Good afternoon, Joe. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, your testimony, please.
Hey, Joe. Yeah, I've just been listening to your show there the last couple of days and discussing the subject on racism. Well, it's nothing new to me anyway. I would be Afro-Celt. I would be. I'm nearly 60 now, and I've been in Ireland all my life.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute disgrace what's going on in this country. An absolute disgrace.
And where were you reared, Brendan?
I would have been reared in a down the country in an orphanage. I spent 17 years there.
And you say an orphanage, but where are your parents deceased?
No. Unfortunately, my mother couldn't acknowledge me and still doesn't to this day. She couldn't acknowledge me because of the colour of my skin. So it was kind of a dark secret, unfortunately. I did trace her when I was about 35. I met her up in the Gresham Hotel, and I she just told me, she said, look, she said, I can't. She said, I have seven other children. I'm married to a white man. And if he found out that I had been with a black man, he would disown me. I'd be out in the street, she said to me. And I said, okay, that's fine. I said, who is my dad? That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
And she told me that he was from Africa, so I went and found him. Okay. So unfortunately, he passed away in 2007 when I got there.
Okay.
So it's been a long journey. But racism in this country deprived me of having a family, having brothers, having sisters, grandparents. Deprived me of everything akin to a family because of racism.
And do you remember when you first endured racist attacks?
Oh God, above! I will tell you, I was in an institution I was 3 weeks old. And when I was 3 weeks old, I didn't, you know, I just being a kid, you wouldn't know any difference. And I was there for about 6 years. And we were sent to the place where the older guys were sent to Artane and Fairy House and Carmel, and the younger guys were just sent up the road in the same town. And I didn't know I was a different colour until I got there.
I did not know. Yeah.
I did not know I was a different colour. I didn't realise there was any issues with dark people or Chinese. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until Roots came out, and even before that, remember the black and white mixer, all this was going on, and on the television, going, what's going on here? Then you're watching programs on the television where the black people are slaves, and they're being treated like, oh. And it started to click with them, because there was no, I mean, I was the only, I think there was only three black guys in the city I was raised in. And we weren't, there was no organizations or anything. Yeah. So we were completely on our own. You know, there was no one you could turn to. There was no one you could talk to. There was no one could tell you to understand, to give you an understanding as to what's going on. Because everywhere you went, you were being called Blackie, the N-word, this and that, the other. And you're going, what is going on? You were ganged up on. You were killed. I'd been left for dead when I was 10 and 11 going to school. Left for dead.
Because of the colour
just ganged up on, just ganged up on people, and even, but the worst of it was, sometimes the parents even joined in with them. I was in a pub one day many years ago, and a pub I used to drink at. I was in my 30s at this stage, and this guy told me, he said he was on about America, and you don't go to America, they hate blacks. I said, okay, but he said to me, when he was growing up, his mother told him, don't ever. Black is evil. Black people are evil. He told me this in the pub. We went on to be good friends. His mother had told him never to associate with a black man.
My God.
His mother told him. But I mean, often you'd be walking down the street in the 60s and 70s and the parents would be with the kids and they're shouting all this at you. And they would do nothing. They would do nothing. So it's instilled. Racism is instilled in many, many Irish people through their parents, the old generation. Now, the new generation hopefully will change, but it won't happen until the hurling, until we see hurling sticks, until we see him playing Gaelic football. I think, I mean, only last year we had the first black Garda, I think. And I think I was looking at the television last year, the championship, and I think I saw one, the first black man ever to play in Croke Park that I've seen anyway. And we have a Chinese guy who's playing with Wexford. But I mean, we need more. I mean, we need more inclusion. We need people to just say, no, look. We are every bit as good. There's a jealousy factor as well, you know what I mean? We'd be better than them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Say with us, Brendan, because the whole thing about people intervening. Michael Martin. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, and good afternoon to your listeners as well.
And tell us what happened, Michael.
Well, Joe, I was coming home one night from town. It was about maybe 3 years ago. I can't quite remember. About 3 years ago. And I was sitting on the bus, and there was a young black. There wasn't too many people on the bus, and there was a young black man. I don't know what age he would have been. Certainly would have been in his mid-20s, maybe early 30s. Sitting on the seat, two or three in front of me. Beside him.
Okay, Michael, I want to get you a better line as well because of this strength. I can see your narrative here on the screen, and I want people to hear it because this is a direction I think we're going in terms of people need to, all of us, regardless of our colour, need to check racism. Stay with us, Michael. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And joe@rt.ie, Michael Martin is telling you were... You were on a bus one night, Michael.
Yes, Joe. I was coming home from town one night. I was sitting on a bus, a young black chap, a young black man in front of me, and he had his little bag, I suppose, sitting on the seat, you know, beside him, like we all do from time to time. And there were seats available on the bus. This white Irish man got on, had a few pints on him, no question about it, because you knew just simply from the way he was acting that he was probably a bit drunk. But that doesn't excuse, Joe, the abuse that he gave that young man. Now, he didn't use the N-word or anything like that, but he basically was shouting at this young black man, saying, you come here and you think you own the bloody place, you know? You know, get your bag up off that seat and let other people sit down. It was utterly unwarranted, Joe. Now, the only point I want to make in chatting to you is this, that there isn't any point in people going for the abuser, going for the racist. That's not going to work. Okay. You yourself are only going to be put in the way. So what you simply do is you intervene by simply standing between the abuser and the person who's been abused, and you offer comfort to the abuser, because that way it simply shows other people around you that you are protecting that man, which is the right thing to do, and you're isolating the racist abuser, which also is the right thing to do. It's the least danger to yourself.
So what did you do, Michael?
Oh, I just simply got up. It was about three seats in front of me. I got up, and I didn't sit in the seat, actually, Joe, because to me, if I sat in the seat, I would have come in for abuse. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. I just leaned over, and I said to the young fella, look, we're not all like that. I'm awful sorry that you've been abused like that. We are not all like that. It meant the world to him. Yeah. You don't have to tackle the abuser. You just simply offer comfort to the person who is being abused. It's the best thing we can do.
What was the reaction of...
of the young man?
No, of the abuser.
Oh, no. The abuser actually... Do you know, Joe, the abuser basically kept quiet. I just went up and I chatted to this young...
You didn't... You ignored your man.
If he had said anything, he just sat in his seat and he was quiet. Now, I'm an older man, Joe. Maybe he took heed of that as well, you know. I'm not a teenager, far from it. In my 60s.
I think now, Joe, he was lucky.
Brendan, go ahead, Brendan.
Generally, these people, you intervene and... they can be very violent. Now, they're very rarely one man. It's very rarely. I've never, ever come across one man on his own abuse me.
That's interesting.
Never. Because the thing about racism is cowardly. It's just a cowardly act. And anybody who carries on like that is just a coward. They're good in gangs. They're no good on their own. And I've experienced that because I went to Dublin. I was in our team. I used to stay with the family.
Yeah.
And be on respite or whatever for the holidays. Up in our town, Dublin 5. A lovely lady. But we used to go out on the green playing football. Now, there was no black people in the area where I was. In fact, I think I was the first guy to arrive of colour. And we went out playing football. Right. Cadbury's break them and they cover them in chocolate. Do you remember that ad?
Yeah.
All that was going on. And as I mentioned about the black and white minstrels, all this going on. And you're there, and you go, what do you do, Joe? I mean, what do you do? Do you go in? I mean, do you hide? As it turned out, I was fairly handy at the soccer. And they learned. I just gained the respect by just being good at football and soccer. Now, I think the way to go is through sport. The only way we can get people, because you remember back years ago when Paul McGrath was playing in the World Cup.
Yeah.
He brought and filled in it then through the bands, through the music. You know, and the people, and the white people then that really kind of gathered together and just became buddies and just realised that, you know, they had a different attitude. You know, they loved the music, they loved the soccer, and they then would stand up for you, you know.
Brendan, did a day go by without...
Never. Your 60s, 70s, early, the mid-60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. Even a man was mentioning about the buses. When I was in Artane getting the 42A and the 42B back to Artane, I might be on my own. And you just run off the bus, you'd be in tears, you'd be just so afraid. Fear, because the biggest fear was that if you were attacked, nobody would come to your aid. Nobody.
Yeah.
You'd be kicked to death, which has happened to me several times. You'd be left for dead on the street, but nobody would come to your aid. And that was the killing part. Yeah. They would be watching and looking at you, and you get up and you'd be covered in blood. It just happened to me, as I said, many times. And nobody would lift a finger to help you.
Is it Phil who wanted to come in? Phil, is it? Sarah?
Yeah, Joe, I was just saying, listening to people, I mean, it's like ticking boxes. You know, every incident that people mention, you can tick the box. You know, that happened. Yeah, I can recognise that. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was going to Skerries one night. I think it was around the end of the 80s. And it was the last bus to Skerries. I was dating a guy from there. Mm-hmm. And we literally had to get off the bus. I mean, it was the last bus, but it was so bad. The abuse was so bad and so vile. I mean, what was said was just so unbelievably vile. And it was funny because the guy I was with said to me, you really don't want me to take them on, do you? I was like, no, I don't. So we just got off the bus, you know, at 12 or half 12 on halfway between Dublin and Skerries. And it's, I know we're constantly talking about name calling and we're constantly talking about these types of attacks, you know, and these things have an impact on your day. They have an impact on whether you want to get out of bed, whether you want to go to work, whether you want to go to school.
Yeah.
And they have an impact on how you behave when you get there, you know. So people can often find you surly or aggressive or complain that you're always angry. But they don't understand what's happened between leaving your house and getting there. You know, they don't understand the gamut of abuse that maybe you've taken the night before or what's been said to your child. You know, that wears you down on a day-to-day basis. You know, that you have to shove down and people say, you know, well, ignore us. And I suppose this is one of the things that I was told as a child. Nobody would ever, or at least didn't seem to have the language to articulate racism. What they would say was if somebody called you names or somebody did something, the first thing they said was ignore us. Ignore it, they're ignorant. Ignore it, they're stupid. Ignore it, they're jealous. Whatever it was. But you had to ignore it. So it became your problem.
Yeah, good point.
You know, it wasn't other people's problem. It was always ignore us. You know, just ignore us. But nobody ever dealt with it. Nobody named it. Nobody claimed us. So you internalize it to the point that you become paralyzed. You're the one that stops going out. And by the time I got to sixth year in school, I had virtually stopped going to school. You know, so I failed the Leaving Cert. But then that was my problem. What was wrong with me?
Yeah,
why
yeah.
wasn't I working? You know, I was lazy.
I just want to ask, Sarah, can I ask you the same question about your son? Obviously, you were what you suffered as well, and the horrible stories you told earlier on, and what was said to your face. But were you aware of the impact it was having on him?
At the time, I don't think I was. I suppose even now, I don't realise the full impact that it had on him. You know, as I say, what he said to me there recently, we were only talking about it recently, and he said, I don't want any more. I don't want children. I wouldn't put a child through what I had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really brought it home to me that, about, you know, how bad it was for him growing up, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose what I was battling that with him, like, you know, that I was trying to protect him. And then also the abuse as a mother of a mixed race child that we suppose we haven't really spoke about either. I mean, that was horrendous too. So when you're asking that lady the question why in the 60s were so many mixed race children put into state care and that, I think it was embarrassment and shame, you know. I think for parents it was from both angles, like, you know, you were trying to protect your child but you were also going through this horrific abuse yourself. I mean, the things that were said to me over the years for being the mother of a mixed race child was horrendous. I mean, things that I wouldn't repeat any time, anywhere would I repeat them because they were so horrendous, you know? So
I suppose, Joe, the question I would ask is, what can we do about it?
Well, we can talk about it for a start and let people educate. I know, Brendan, Brendan, you probably said you've been talking about it for 60 years.
What in the name of God can we do about it? Because if it's not addressed and there's not a solution, and not so much a solution, if people don't realise how bad and how wrong it is, people are going to get hurt because there's a lot more young guys out there now who are dark and they go to school on their own. Now, many of them, some probably don't have parents like me. But without parents, I mean, and any kind of kin here, you're on your own. But I mean, are we going to wait until some kids are found dead or something? Because that's the way it's going if it's not sorted.
Well, remember, I don't mean I'm speaking to the listenership, not you, Brendan, but I just say to our regular listeners, it's not too long ago since we had the mother of a young woman, Maya, wasn't it, who died by suicide of the racial abuse she was enduring.
My son now, Joe, my son, in fact, lost his life through racism. I really believe it. He was suicide, a victim of suicide, and it was racism that brought it on.
And that's not that unusual, Joe.
Yeah.
That's not that unusual at all. People, and particularly for young men, you know, and I mean, you look at the traveller community and the rates of suicide within the traveller community as well. you know, and they would attribute that to the type of racism and discrimination and stigma that they experience. But I think what we have to do is we have to educate people out of the belief that they have the right to be wrong, you know, and not just wrong in the sense of getting it wrong, but wrong in the sense that they have this belief system, you know, and society has to make it not acceptable, you know, and people have to be educated out of their belief, this racist belief, regardless of whether they believe they have a right to continue in the wrong thinking,
well, hopefully this...
And I think people shouldn't have to justify their existence. We shouldn't have to justify who we are. We are who we are. Yeah. And we have to educate society that in permitting people to express racist views, you know, it's like a blister pushing out the pus that's in the body. Mm. You know, there's this belief system in society, systemic racism, it just exists.
Okay.
And I think if we initially, the only way to get rid of it is by combining severe penalties and comprehensive education programs, you know, so that after a while you get rid of it, like the desire to speed. There'll always be people who want to speed and break the limit, but in general, most people will obey the rules, even if they disagree with the rules, and over time their thought processes change.
Well, we shouldn't
and that's all you're asking for, you know. You're not saying you can get rid of racism, but people who believe they can be openly racist have to take the view that it's not acceptable, and they have to be shown that it's not acceptable.
Absolutely.
And when you create it, that people accept that when they go to, say, a pub, that's a public sphere. They know they can't smoke, but the pubs themselves create an area where people can go if they want to smoke. So you'll always have smokers. And racism is the same. We're not saying you'll get rid of it, but you, how do you accommodate the fact that there'll always be racists? I think you have to accommodate by
smokers
might being get in a black space and knowing that you don't have to.
I take your point. We shouldn't have to bring in laws for people to behave in a basic human decent way.
Yeah, but Joe, Martin Luther King said the law doesn't make a man love me, but it certainly stops him from lynching me.
Okay. I don't know if smokers will take to the I know what you're trying to say, but remember, smoking is legal in Ireland. The state makes lots of money out of smoking through taxes and all that. But anyway, I take your point, Phil. Thanks indeed, Phil Mullen, Brendan, Michael Martin, Sarah, and your family. Thanks also. 51551. As I say, keep washing your hands. We're still in the middle of this.
Yo!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Shay Logo Braithwaite, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, hi.
How are you? And you emailed us. You heard Trey Jones, who was on the programme on Friday, that incredible young man talking about his experience of racism. It's a letter he wrote and you read out on the programme. And you say, I am Shay Logo Braithwaite, a past pupil of St. Columba's College in Dublin. I saw your coverage of the boy who wrote about being racially abused at school, and I felt I should reach out about the culture in St. Columba's that you experienced. Why are you coming out and going public now?
Because, you know, amidst what's going on in the USA right now with the protests and, you know, the Justice for George Floyd movement, I just felt like it was a pretty telling time. Like, this is like the perfect time to come out about it, because these are experiences which I have buried down for years. I'm about to graduate from university and I haven't spoken about these experiences. I shoved them to the back of my mind and try to forget them. But, you know, with all this that's happening now, I just couldn't help but think, you know, Ireland has a very big race problem that is not being acknowledged.
Now, the story about the John Steinbeck novel of Mice and Men, what happened in class?
Oh, okay. So in classes, when reading, you know, some kinds of historical texts, if they're set in the, you know, 1920s USA, which is, of course, a very racist time. So there was a character in the book. He was referred to as a stable buck or the N-word. And he basically was just racially abused throughout the whole book. And in class, we were allowed to say those words. Like the N-word in class, like if you're reading the book, you're allowed to say it. So one day I was just sitting in the canteen with a couple of my friends and then we were just having a discussion and someone said to me, I could have you strung up to a tree so fast.
Oh, God.
Which is pretty much threatening to have me lynched so fast it ain't even funny. And, you know, those kinds of things were the kind of things that were allowed to run. Like, I definitely reported that statement like this. I had someone threatened to lynch me, you know, and
because of your color, Shay Logo, that's the lunacy. It's apart from the cruelty of it, the lunacy of it.
Exactly.
And did that person, I know you've gone on social media the weekend as well. That person would obviously remember saying such a nasty thing. Have you spoken or heard from them since?
Yeah, I have heard from the person. The person actually sent me a very lengthy apology for all the racist remarks and the racial abuse that I was subject to by the person's hand and by the person's friend's hand at the college. So it was kind of surreal getting that apology, you know, a couple of years after I've, you know, graduated from the college, and a person that has done these things to me, made me feel small over the years, is apologizing and acknowledging that everything was out of order. Like, it's not just in my head, the way the school made me feel when I made those reports. Like,
okay. And did you accept the apology, or did you get any insight into why that person had been so cruel?
The person did say that they had no, you know, excuse. Like, but the person said they had no excuse for what they did. They can't justify it. I've forgiven, you know, because it's been a couple of years. And what I really do blame is not the person, but the school for not hammering it into the students that racism is not tolerated, you know.
And I said this, I asked Trey the same question, Trey Jones the same question on Friday. Now, he was in primary school. But given that St. Columba's is there's a mix of nationalities, isn't there, because of the boarding school and people come from different countries. But what was there discussion in civics class or any other form about racism? Was that ever discussed in class?
It's not something, you know, we never had that in SPHE or CSPE. Yeah, yeah. That was never a topic of discussion. It was only in, say, if we had like a history class, that race would ever be an issue. And that's because, you know, we're studying the civil rights movement in the USA. It wasn't really like racism in Ireland or why you can't say certain things. You know, there was never education of that sort at school. Never.
Yeah. Now, we've had a statement we alerted the school to the fact that you were going to come on and ask them would they like to supply a spokesperson. They've declined. But what they do say, we have plenty to learn and it would be constructive to talk about how we are going to move forward once the review process is completed. So they've initiated a review. But when were you told that review was initiated?
They said they confirmed the review yesterday. I found out the same time as everyone when they posted it on the website.
Shay Logo, Trey on Friday, Trey Jones, he spoke about racism outside of the school and his day-to-day life. Now, did you experience that?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that I did, because I spent most of my time in Ireland at the college. So most of it was concentrated there. It's six day school days, 6 days a week. We had school on Saturday, so there isn't much time to get out. Yeah.
Okay. And Shay Logo, what do you want the school to do now?
What I want them to do is make an inclusive society for the Black children, so no one has to go through the things that we've been through, we're going through. And like, it needs to be more culturally inclusive. They need to be classes, like, incorporated into SPHE, talk about race, embrace other cultures, not just Irish culture, because it's a multinational school. It's just not right. Now, so then there needs to be,
When you left the school in 2017, but just before you left, a new warden took over, who's the principal, basically. Mark Boubier. Now, he, in fairness, he wrote on May the 10th on his newsletter, the warden's blog, about racism and diversity. And he revealed in that racism comes from ignorance, from not knowing the culture and context of the other person, not being prepared to find out by actually getting to know people outside one's own ethnic group or social circle. Yeah. I often say to parents who are contemplating boarding here that there is no better preparation for life in the real world than living in a boarding house full of people who are different from oneself. A boarding house is a melting pot in which young people learn to appreciate each other, those who have totally different interests, often those whom one might not naturally like. He then says he worked for 4 years in a school in South Africa, so he's very conscious of racism. The school at this stage seem to be taking your allegations and those of other pupils very, very seriously, indeed. Yeah. But anyway, we wait and see what happens. What are you studying, Shay Logo? What's your course?
I'm about to graduate from University of Nottingham. I'm studying economics.
Oh, well done. Brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And where do you hope to work?
I hope to work back home in Nigeria. I'm planning on moving back and opening a restaurant, not really doing anything with my economics degree.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you had to take this path of raising these issues, but a lot of organizations are dealing with these issues seriously. So we wait and see. Shay Logo, Braithwaite, thanks indeed, and stay safe. And I hope your ambitions come true. It sounds like they will.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Thanks so much.
Bye bye.
Bye. Bye. Joe
Duffy. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. By the way, Shay Logo, before the break, she was talking about St. Columba's boarding school, that's in South Dublin, whereas Trey's letter, just given we've been talking about so many schools, Trey's letter, the 11-year-old, about his school is St. Columbkilles Senior National School in Kells. They're very, very different locations and different levels. One is a national school, one is a second level boarding school. Okay, let's listen to Rory. Rory, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? How are you?
Good. What your testimony, please, Rory?
So I would be mixed race, mother, Irish, father from India, and grew up during the 90s out in a small village in Meath. I won't name the name, but it's a very big town now, probably near Ferry House Racecourse. So I would have attended a primary school out there. Now, I experienced my first probably racist remarks there growing up, and I would have been only probably 6, 7, up to 12, but it was from a minority of kids, always a minority. Can I name the slurs used? Or
we just give a. It's terrible that you have to do this, Rory. That's the first thing I want to say to you. The second thing is I'm very conscious, and we talked about it a lot before with Trey and his family on Friday before asking Trey to read out his letter, because they're deeply disturbing words to hear.
Yeah, they are.
But a couple of things strike me. One, you have the exact same heritage as our Taoiseach. His father was from India. His mother from Ireland. My grandmother was born in India, but she was born to Irish parents, so to speak, who's in the Connacht Rangers. So yes, say what you will, Rory. Say what you will. People have to hear. People have to hear this.
In primary school, I wouldn't call a black bastard was one. Black banana skin was another. Now, these kids probably didn't know what they were saying at the time, but when I encountered it, it kind of shocked me, because I was kind of thinking to myself, wow, I'm different to these other kids. And that's when it first kind of hit me that skin colour was an issue. So then our dad sent me to a very well-known rugby school, fee-paying school in the south side of Dublin. I won't name the name, but it's in a very affluent area.
Okay.
Around Donnybrook, Spalls Bridge area.
Okay.
And I experienced more racism there by so-called educated people. Mm. And there I was called the N-word, black bastard again, gypsy, etc., etc. Now, again, it was by a minority.
It was by a minority, but they what they said in Venom was 100% an attack on you because of your skin color. So
Now I always kind of wondered why was there a hatred there against colored people, or was it coming from the families? I don't know. But I also experienced this in the city centre, maybe on nights out. So, like, all my friends are Irish, white Irish. Mm-hmm. But I've experienced being targeted by people one time on a Nightlink home from the city centre out to a different part of Dublin, where I was on the top deck of a Nightlink with a friend of mine who was white.
Okay.
A group of guys were sitting up the front. Everyone had a few drinks in them, obviously, on the Nightlink. Mm. And next thing, a chant started out, get the packy off the bus, get the packy off the bus. Now, I think I was the only half-race person on the top deck at the time, so it was directed at me. I could see them looking back, laughing. So it was probably about five of them, me and my friend. My friend was like, let's get off the bus early, because this could turn nasty.
Yeah.
Because the guys weren't stopping, and there was other people saying, here, leave it out. You know, don't be, you're idiots. Like, but they kept chanting it. So I had a few drinks. I mean, normally I would have got off the bus with my friend, because I'm quite timid and shy. I would kind of avoid confrontation, but I went over to the guys and I sat down beside one of them and I said, "Conas a thought it.
Fair play.
Caught a son of this." And they didn't know what to say. Yeah. They were shocked. They stopped chanting and I went back to the seat, but then they started getting annoyed then for what I'd done. I had to get off the bus early then because they were getting agitated. But...
And did anyone check them, Rory?
Nah, on the bus.
Yeah.
There was one or two people that said,
give it over.
They told them to stop chanting and leave me alone.
Yeah.
But there's been other cases like getting off a bus, Erin bus in Dunchapland, and just being called a gypsy for no reason. You know.
Yeah. Stay with us, Rory. Kevin.
Yeah. Joe, how are you?
Paul McGraw was mentioned earlier on. You say you witnessed Paul being racially abused.
I did, yeah. Back in the 80s, he was playing down in Galway.
Uh-huh.
And he got it throughout the match. You know, they called the N-word and black this and black that. Who's your mother? Who's your father? The bananas were mentioned, all that kind of stuff, you know.
And was anyone checked them? Did anyone say?
No, nobody was checked. No, I was on my own, and this was a group of elderly men. Like, they weren't young, like, they were elderly. They were old enough to have sense. But as I said in my text, that they were probably cheering him on when he started playing for Man United in Ireland later, you know, because he was one of the best defenders in the world.
An outstanding representative for Ireland, yeah.
And still is.
Yeah, he's born in Inchicore in Dublin.
Yeah, exactly.
Kevin, say with us, Charles in Tipperary. Charles, your story, please. What happened?
Yeah, I was on the Lewis one day.
The Lewis, okay.
And a young lady got on with a pushchair and a child.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a gentleman who was drunk and actually drinking a can of beer at the time.
Okay.
And he started out, you know, the usual N-word, go back to where he came from, this kind of stuff. And nobody on the Lewis said a word.
So he's chanting the N-word, that horrific, venomous word.
Yeah.
Simply because of the colour of the woman's skin.
Yeah.
And... Well, were people afraid to intervene, do you think, Charles?
Well, no, I mean, I'm probably about 6 inches taller than him and about 5 stone heavier than him. So I had no problem in telling him where to go and to behave himself and so on. But the unfortunate thing was he got off at the next stop.
Okay.
And as he left, he poured the rest of the beer over the child.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely appalling behaviour. But I made my best to apologise to the young lady, who was obviously very shocked
Did you say you checked him prior to him getting off? You said to him, stop that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
He was about 6 inches shorter than me, so it was safe enough.
Yeah.
5 stone lighter.
But you told him to shut up.
Yeah.
Okay. And his final gesture to that. Mother and child was to, after verbally abusing because of their skin colour, pouring alcohol over the child's head. What a despicable thing to do.
Joe, yeah. Can I come in there for a moment, please?
Yes. Who's that, Kevin?
Yes, please. I often wondered, do white people be racially abused in we'll say, African countries or places like that to the same degree as we are here?
I doubt it somehow, but I'm
yeah, sure I often wondered, you know.
Okay, good question to finish on. Yeah. Thanks indeed, Kevin. Thanks, Charles. Okay. Thanks, Rory. Today's producer was Angus McKnight. Oh, I forgot to mention this earlier. On Thursday, one of our callers, a publican, said that the VFI, the Vintners Federation of Ireland, hadn't been in touch and were still charging their sub. We're happy to point out that the VFI have been sending out regular emails to members and didn't collect subs during March. Okay, joe@rte.ie continues. And Ray Darcy is next.